And as we went through the book of Jeremiah, all 52 chapters. So when we come to the 52nd chapter and we come to the end, it's dealing with what's going on in the great city of Babylon. And therefore, what happened to the Jews? And so as we turn the page, God added, because here's Jerusalem in ruins, and here's everyone over there, and the Jews are scattered, and they're all over the place. And Jews have gone down to Egypt, etc. And Nebuchadnezzar is the conqueror, and it's the beginning of the times of the Gentiles. So, when we come to the end of chapter 52, we're in Babylon still. So, we turn the page to the book of Lamentations, and God adds, puts in Lamentations, lament, alas. It has to do with lamenting, death, grief, terrible grief in the light of things happening. So, what do we have? Well, we have Babylon and the people that are taken there. So when we come to Lamentations, we're going to look at the five different eulogies or five different poems, 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, each chapter three, we don't need all that. But in the process, you'll pick up the thought, chapter 1, verse 1. How doth the city of solitary sit solitary, that was full of people? How is she become as a widow, she that was great among the nations and princes among the provinces? How is she become a tributary? In other words, she is under bondage. She isn't anymore. We're looking at Jerusalem as a widow, personifying it as a woman. But Jerusalem's looking at herself in ruins, in utter ruins. The temple, the people, the buildings, the wall, everything is in ruins. It's not a good time. It's a sad time. And everywhere you look is in ruins. Everything you look at is in ruins. Where you went to the store, as it were, using our language, where you go to the store, where you lived, everything about your whole life, the people, everything is dust. It's all gone. We can understand things gone in life. But when it's all gone, the whole thing is gone. Think of it if you were in Hiroshima years ago and you happened to be out of the city on a trip when you returned ultimately to Hiroshima. What would you have had? Flatness. Flatness. Everything, every building, everything, flat. Wow. That's hard. That's what you're looking at. God's helping us understand. And Jeremiah lived through this. And Jeremiah, remember, was in prison. Jeremiah was in prison when Nebuchadnezzar took the city. Jeremiah was in chains. He was led in chains with the rest of the chain gang. He was in chains. He was beaten. Down he went, down the corridor with the rest of them. And so he lived through this. He lived everywhere he looked. Everything he knew was gone. From his human perspective, everything is gone. That is very hard. We can't imagine it, unless we've been through it. And none of us have been through that kind of thing. So now, Lamentations, what are you doing? The lamenting. You're grieving over the conditions. How do you handle the grieving? And in the light of that, how do you do it? How is Israel going to come along? And anyway, it's jumping ahead. Go over to chapter 3. And Lamentations in chapter 3, picking up, if I may, picking up the flavor of it in verse 18. And I said, my strength and my hope is perished from the Lord. Remember his, you have to think of Jeremiah as he had to go through this. You know, he was beaten, he was in chains, in the chain gang, being captive. You have to understand that. So here he is, the prophet, trying to tell him that you don't have to go through. You could have, Nebuchadnezzar would have touched the, wouldn't have touched the city if you just repented, but you didn't do it. Now, so, verse 18, and I said, my strength and my hope is perished from the Lord. Everything that I have, my strength, my hope, my expectancy, the future, all fell apart. Verse 19, remembering mine affliction and my misery and my wormwood and my gall, wormwood and gall, remember them in the process, my bitterness, wormwood, my gall, poison. I lived through this. I went through it. It was awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. That's what I've been through. Now, having said that and keeping that in mind, if you would, verse 19, remembering my affliction, etc., my wormwood and gall. Now, in order to get that quickly, to see that, to grab that, jump way ahead into history, and what do you have? You have our Lord going to Calvary's cross. Now, what Jeremiah went through and understood and went through, here is our Lord. Now, Lord, you're going to help us without us exercising it too much. You're going to help us understand in those last 3 hours on Calvary's cross, Matthew 27, verse 46. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? And that's the closest we can come to understanding chapter 3 and Jeremiah. Well, I went through it, he said. Why do I have to go through this? Why? To bear our sin in his own body on the tree. Now, having said that, and picking up, please, and remember Jeremiah said in verse 18, my hope is perished, my expectancy, what I'm looking for, what I'm waiting for. And therefore, verse 20, my soul hath them still in remembrance, and is humbled in me. I can't, it's awful hard to forget it. And people that have been through very hard things for a very long time, sometimes it's not so easy to forget. And somehow it keeps coming back, understandably. But now, so we're looking at it. So I'm looking at understanding the Jews that have any sense of anything that's healthier in their thinking, understand everything has gone down the tubes. It didn't have to be, but boy, it surely is. And therefore, it's all gone. It's nothing. And we're left with nothing. And our distinction as God's people as God's nation, and the glory of that relationship is all gone. We don't have it. And my children, and their grandchildren, and their children, and their children won't have it either. We lost it back here, and we haven't got it yet. So each generation faces the same bankruptcy as you go down the corridor. Now, so, we're, God, you're trying to help us, that's right. So, Lamentations in chapter 3, in chapter 3 in verse 21. And in chapter 3, in verse 21, this I recall to my mind. Therefore have I hope. Now, John, what are you doing? He's calling, and it's causative. In other words, he's making himself think it through. He could just sit back and let it all go and not work at it. No, he's going to try to put the pieces together that he knows. And he's going to do that. So he's going to roll up his sleeves and think his ministry, what God was doing in his grace, everything, and he puts it together. And you know, I have to do that. David had to do that, remember, in 1 Samuel. He lost. His men were going to kill him, at least they thought of killing him, because he made a bad move and lost the children, lost their goods, lost all their families. And David had to do what? David said he encouraged himself in the Lord. There was no way. Everything around him was bad news. He needed to what? Get to God. So he encouraged himself. The word encouraged, remember, was to bring all the pieces together, all the problems, all the issues, every piece, the bad pieces, the good pieces, everything, what you understood, what you didn't understand, you bring it all together and give it to God. And give it to God. And God encouraged his heart. That's the word encourage. He gave God all the pieces so that he isn't going to worry about them, fret about them, or tear himself apart. He's going to give God the pieces. Now, having said that little bit, and keeping that in mind, so that's what he needs to do. So, and to see that, to tie that a little more to us, keep your finger there if you like, and go over to Psalm 42. And Jeremiah called everything to mind. David, illustration, called everything to mind. And what are we going to do? What does David do? Psalm 42, which you're familiar with, which is very wonderful. Psalm 42, sliding down, if I can. David's had a lot of problems, he does. And what does he do? Verse chapter 42, and in verse 3. My tears have been my meat day and night, while they continually say unto me, where is thy God? In other words, David's going through what he is, and David says, they're after me, they're right, they aren't wrong. David said, I'm a believer, I'm supposed to be trusting God. Where is your God? So, verse 4, when I remember these things, I poured out my soul in me. 4, I had gone with the multitude. I went with them to the house of God with the voice of joy and praise, with a multitude that kept holy day. I went with the people that were looking to be encouraged by God. I went with the right crowd for the right reasons to come out rightly. And therefore, verse 5, why art thou good talking to yourself? Why art thou cast down, O my soul? And why art thou disquieted, disturbed in your mind and heart, divided up all over the place? And disquieted in me, hope. Remember, we're going to keep reading it in chapter 3 of Lamentations. Hope. In verse 5 again. Why art thou cast down my soul? Why art thou disquieted within me? Hope thou in God. Why? For I shall yet praise him. For what? The help, the healing, the health. Help, healing, health. Word. I will yet praise him for the help of his countenance, the word countenance, face, in the plural, always plural, faces. So, I look to God, and God is going to be, I look to God, and God gave me the encouragement when I did. He's going to be the help, the healing, the health of my of his countenance. That's what I need to say. I need to say that God, I gave you all the pieces. It's a terrible thing. I'm in the middle of it. God, here I am. So help me. And you know, as you keep reading down, and you'll see this, get it without spending time in it. Verse 6, oh my God, my soul is cast down within me. Therefore will I remember thee from the land of Jordan and from Hermones, from the hill Mizor. Deep calleth unto deep, it and the noise of thy waterspouts. All thy waves and thy billows are gone over me. So I'm buried with what's happening. I'm buried with it. Keep going. Verse 9. I will say unto God, my rock, why hast thou forgiven me? Why hast thou forgotten me? Why did you forget me? Why go I a mourning? Because of the oppression of the enemy, as with a sword in my bones, mine enemies reproach me, while they say continually, daily, with me, daily, unto me, they keep saying it, where is thy God? And now David jumps because he's catching on. Verse 11, again, as in verse 5, why art thou cast down, O my soul? And why art thou disquieted within me? Hope thou in God, for I will yet praise him, who is the health. That's the same word down as you had in verse 4, help, health, healing. Who is the health? And then there's a wonderful change in the pronoun, the health of my face and my God countenance. I looked to God, and God had it, and I had the mess. But then I kept looking to God, and they said, where is your God? And I looked at you, God, and what you conveyed to me and brought to my heart, you brought your confident assurance that you'd be merciful and give me a wonderful future expectancy to come and quiet my heart. Okay. Now, back over to Lamentations. And in chapter 3, in Lamentations chapter 3, I'm picking up if I may, if I can, I have hope. verse 22, it is of the Lord's mercies. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. So what are you knowing, Jeremiah? Well, God is merciful. If God wasn't merciful, we'd never make it. God has to be merciful to us. He has to see our misery, our miserableness, and he has to help us. He has to know, as he says to us, so we don't have to guess, God, you surely know what? We are of the dust of the ground. You surely know we are as grass of the field. You surely know we are a little flower that disappears in an hour or two after being on planet Earth. So we're nothing apart from you. So God back in like in verse 22 again, God, if your mercies weren't there, where would we be? Now, to catch that again, go over to, hold your finger, and go over to Malachi when you come to the end of the Old Testament. And in Malachi, picking up, if I may, and in the chapter 3, Malachi 3, you'll pick it up in thought. And you'll note chapter 3, and sliding over in the light of the context, verse 6. God, Lord, I am, Lord, for I am the Lord. I change not. Therefore, you sons of Jacob are not consumed. If I wasn't gracious, you'd be consumed. But you're not consumed, because I'm going to be merciful to you. And you're going to get there. So what do you say? Here's Babylon. Here's the terrible condition of Israel. No God, no temple, nothing. But God said, I'm going to be merciful, and I'm going to keep you, and I have a wonderful plan for your life, and it's going to happen. That's what you need to know. If I wasn't merciful, you'd never make it. But because I am merciful. So therefore, back over if I can to Lamentations. And Lamentations, if I can, picking up, please, in verse 23. They were new, the compassions, the mercies. The mercies that new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. So God, what do we know? Every day you get out of bed, it's a new day. You start all over again. And God's mercy is there. God's mercy is there, like in the end of verse 22, and thy compassions fail not, and new every morning, in the morning, great is thy faithfulness. And because you're God and because you're faithful, you're going to be merciful. God's faithful to be who he is, to do what he does, the way he does it. And it's God's faithfulness that you and I are to be trusting in order to be faithful. I'm going to be faithful till I die. I'm going to make it. I would say it, but I can't do it. I wouldn't trust myself to anything could happen to change anything. But, so we aren't going to trust that. No, we're not going to trust that, God. We're going to trust you. We're going to trust your faithfulness, your compassion, your mercy. That's what we're going to trust. And we're going to trust that God. And in trusting your consistency, your countenance, your consistency is going to transfer to my little heart, in my heart. And I'm going to learn to be consistent, to learn to be faithful. Not trusting ourselves trusting ourselves to be, but trusting you to be, since you are faithful. And we're to enjoy your faithfulness, your mercy, your hope. And therefore, God, we can do it. Because it isn't up to us. Up to us, there's only ruins and loss and sadness. But God, with you, it isn't so. So God, thank you for your faithfulness, your consistency. So, sliding down again, in the light of that, in verse 24, the Lord is my portion, saith the Lord. Therefore, will I hope in him? God, we just said it, we just looked at it, in the thought at least, in thought and understanding it. God, you're going to go, and you're my inheritance. You're the one we can trust. God, the lot, my lot is cast into your lap, and the outworking of it is yours. So God, thank you. My portion, my inheritance, my whole future is in your hands, God. And thus, therefore will you, will I hope in him, verse 24. Verse 25, the Lord is good unto them that wait for him. Wait for him to the soul that seeketh him. So the soul, what are we going to do? We're going to wait for him. We're going to wait. And the word wait there has to do waiting, it's a participle. Be waiting, holding on tight, hold on to tight, don't back off, don't slide away, hang on tight, stay steady, stay with it, and keep on seeking God, looking for God's encouragement, God's help, God's working, keep on looking for it, don't quit, hang on, and sliding down, and then to verse 26. It is good again. The Lord is good, verse 25. Verse 26, it is good, the same word, that it is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man to be hoping, expecting, understanding God isn't finished. The thing has to be outworked. It has to be done in the right way, in the right time. So it all has to come together. And whosoever is going to be going to wait. And in the process, and in verse 24, should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. And the word quietly wait has to do with waiting on God in silence, to level, the word level, to level something. God, quiet your heart. There's another little verb that comes out the same way. We use it in Psalm 37 and Exodus, you know, be still as a stone. Wait. How still? Just put a stone. Remember we used to have a stone? The stone doesn't move. Be still as a stone. Be silent, quietly. Calm your heart down. Calm down and level off. Don't be all like this, all bumpy. A troubled heart, troubled sea, troubled ocean. Don't be doing that. Calm, quiet. And therefore, seeketh, and don't holding fast God's outworking, his wonderful workmanship in a most wonderful, wonderful way. And so God said, be quiet. Quietly wait for the salvation of God. So God, what are we doing? We're going to look to you to outwork as you do it. And God, and a way that you can remember that word quiet, wait, quietly wait, the word. One of the ways they do that is translate it this way, asleep. It means to be asleep with your eyes open. Quiet your heart as if you're sleeping, but keep your eyes open. That's the word. Quietly wait. Keep your eyes open and sleep. Watch.
Watch. Jeanette has done that a couple of times, something and something and something. Anyway, you don't need all that stuff. But what? Said Jen, I'm not sleeping. I'm looking at the ceiling. I'm looking at the ceiling. She said, you're sleeping. No, I'm looking at the ceiling. I'm looking at the ceiling. So, quiet, 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 quiet. Now, having said that, waiting for the salvation of God, looking for God's deliverance, God's good timing, God's good timing. In our times, God's good timing has to be outworked in a wonderful, wonderful way. Now, having said that, and keeping that in mind, if I can, and so here's Jerusalem, as we shared together, and Jeremiah has to what? Get to get his act back right, get his act back in an order. And so he has to look to God. That's what he did. But he records this. God, in his wonderful providence, has him recorded the book of Lamentations. So what? So we could understand. Jeremiah was left looking to God, but the nation of Israel is where it is today. They have no God, and no temple, no hope for them. And they're facing all kinds of things. All kinds of things they have to, they're planning right now to do and not do to try to survive. They're trying to do it now. So having said that, and keeping that in mind, go over with me to exercise that a little bit. Over, if you would please, over to Numbers and to exercise what we're looking at. Numbers chapter 13. And you would know. When you're facing, when a person, believer is facing whatever it is, and no matter how bad it could be, like a ruined city or an overwhelming army. And so here Israel is to go forward in the midst of often difficult things, to say the least. They're going to go against, in Palestine, 33 kings. And the 33 kings are there with armies, chariots of iron, giants. They got everything. Here's Israel's army. And looking at this, wow. So now, and you already know all this, but what was the problem? Well, they said, listen, there's the walls. The walls are higher than the heavens. Exaggerated everything, higher than the heavens. But that's what they said. We can never get through the walls and the chariots and the giants and everything. And in chapter 13, you remember, sliding down, so you read it again. In chapter 13, picking up, please, going up to in verse 31. But the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land wherewith, while they had searched, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it, and is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it, men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, called, come to the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and lo, so we were in their sight, little grasshoppers. Well, there's no way to do anything. And it was silly because there was no problem. But there was a problem because they didn't see God. And they had no sense that God understood the problem. God understood that what they were up against, all they had to do was trust God. God didn't ask him to solve the problem. God didn't ask him to beat the enemy. God didn't ask him to overcome the problem. God just asked him to trust him. That's all he asked. God just said, "Will you trust me when I go do it?" And thus you, and Caleb and Joshua, as you know, chapter 13, verse 30, and Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. We're quite able to make it. We can do it. But you know what? They just didn't have any hope, and they didn't have any sense of God's mercy. God understood they were just them. They were Egyptian slaves that are going to go against army, trained army people. That's what they were going to do. So you got that idea. So therefore, no God, no hope, and let's go back to Egypt, they said. See? And that's why, because you're going. A ruined city, an overwhelming army. Go with me, please, over if I can, to Job. Job in chapter, if I can, in chapter 40. And in Job chapter 40, and here's Job. This is now personal. It's a personal illustration to illustrate. And God just took one person. He didn't take anyone else there. He didn't do this to Abraham. He just did it to Job. He did it. And he put Job through the ringer. And Job couldn't have had any more problems, because he said, from the top of my head to my toes, I got problems. I got problems. I got problems with my body. My family's gone. My income's gone. Everything, my servants are gone. Everything. I got a wife still that complained and tell me, why didn't you just die? You know. So Job says, listen, it's tough, but Job is going to trust God. Jeremiah is trusting God. David and Caleb are going to trust God. Trust God, look to God, and God's going to do a wonderful thing. But sliding over, if I can, to Caleb and Joshua are going to trust God. David's going to trust God. So, chapter 38, remember, all the questions. God's going to test Job and tell Job, because Job's there trying to figure it all out. Now hang on to that, because you remember it in chapter 38, etc. And Job is having to go and going to have to answer all these questions. And in the process, he's going to be tested by God to see if he's ready to enter the dialogue and the conversation intelligently. So, chapter 38, verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job and said, out of the whirlwind, and said, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? God, I just want to have some of the little answers. Okay. Gird up now your loins, tighten your belt. You're going to be busy now mentally. I want you to get involved. Gird up your loins like a man, and I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. Where was thou when I laid the foundation of the earth? Earth. Declare thou hast, if you have understanding. Tell me, where were you when I did the foundation? I hung the earth in the middle of space, and I put the foundation down, and then put the everything else to make the world come out, Genesis 1, 1 and 2. Were you there, Job? Were you there? Tell me about what you think about what I did. See? And by the way, they wouldn't have had Moses back then, so Job wouldn't have had any Bible. He has no Bible. None of them did. They just had God. That's what they had. And God did this one. God talked to this one. God, it was a personal thing that God did. So we take chapter 38, 39, sliding over to chapter 40. And in chapter 40, verse 1, moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, "How shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? He that reproveth God, let him answer him." Answer it. So you want to talk about things, Job? You didn't do very good in your test. You didn't do very good in your test, did you? No. And by the way, Job, let's keep going with it in thought. In verse 2, again, shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? He that reproveth God, let him answer it. Then Job answered the Lord and said, now let's see what Job has learned. Verse 4, behold, I was vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay mine hand upon my mouth. I'm going to shut up. Smart. Did you get the message, Job? I did. That's the same thing if we had read in Lamentations. Jeremiah is going to say, I shut up. I put my hand over my mouth. And it was quiet. There's no sense in debating with God. I just need to listen to God and be still as a stone, quiet, and wait on God and hope. God wants me to wait. To wait and God's on our work, his wonderful working. Now, so therefore, again, verse 4, behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth. Once have I spoken, but I will not answer thee. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further. I'm not going to go any further, God. No, I'm done. I'm going to shut up. You tell me what you want, how I want to do it. And God, I got him. And God does it. And as you read the next sections, you know, God says, listen, I made all, and back then, when after the flood and all of that, and in the process, some of those animals are still alive, dinosaurs and rhinoceroses and brontosaurus and other osauruses and everything, you know, they're all there. And God says, listen, on the ocean, big dings, and God says, listen, like in verse chapter 40, verse 15, behold, now behemoth, which I made with thee, he eateth grass as an ox, and his tail is like iron. It tells all about him. Now, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do, Jeremiah? You are a little midget compared to the animals that are around you. They're huge, and you're just new. Now, Job, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? God said, listen, I made all these things, and they are nothing. I just made them like that. So if you think there's something I can't do, why don't you just look at the animals around you and see how I made them? Boy, are they big. Boy, are they powerful. That's right. Chapter 41. Chapter 42. In closing, you got the message, Job. I did. Chapter 42, verse 1. Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that thou canst do many things, everything, and that no thought can be withholden from thee. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not. Things too wonderful for me, which I know not. I was trying to handle your awesome person in my own little way, in my little finite mind. And boy, I didn't do very good, God. I just needed to what? To yield quietness, still as a stone. I needed to look to you and level off and learn. Sliding down, verse 4. Hear, I beseech thee, and I will speak. I will demand of thee, and declare thou unto me. I have heard of thee by the hearing of my ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Wherefore, I abhor myself in dust and ashes. God, wow. And he humbled himself. And he humbled himself before God in a most wonderful, wonderful way. Now, applying all that, you have to learn. Personal, the enemy can be a big thing you're doing, but you got to trust God, right? Trust his mercy and trust God. Be still as a stone, et cetera, et cetera, and go forward. That's what you need. Quietness and confidence shall be your strength. That's what you need to do. And when things are terrible, 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 you need to do the same thing. And we pin down Job, who was all alone, all by his lonesome. God just did all of this to one man, little old one man, to Job, to teach him. Now, does God care? Yeah. God cares about each heart. He would do that to every heart, to train it. That's what we're doing, the believers, for us. To be what we're supposed to be, to do what we're supposed to do, to grow. That's what it's about. That's what it's all about. And we need to exercise it and do it. Over to Romans in closing. Remember in Romans and in chapter 4, chapter 11, Romans chapter 11, and you would recall, we were there last time when we looked at Israel's going to be beaten up, opposed, and in every way, and going to be treated wrongly, and that's just the way it is, and isn't going to go away. So, when we did all that, so now, Romans chapter 11, and chapter 11, what are we told? God, the sorrow, the problems happen to Israel. I'll do it directly just in case. Chapter 11, you know it, verse 11. I say then, have they stumbled, that's the Jew, that they should fall? God forbid, but rather through their fall, salvation, God let the whole thing fall apart to teach them and to help us. To teach that fall upon, to come unto the Gentiles, the salvation to come unto the Gentiles, for to provoke them to jealousy. Now, if the fall of them be the riches of the world, and the diminishing of them be the riches of the Gentiles, that's us, how much more their fullness when they're in the kingdom, how much more will they bless the whole world? Back over to chapter 11, and God's going to go and save them. Verse 25, verse 26, the times of the Gentiles. Verse 26, and all Israel shall be saved. Saved, as is written. There shall come out of Zion the deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. Now, and thus over to verse 30 and 4. As in times past, have not believed God, yet now have obtained mercy through their unbelief. Even so, these also have not believed that through your mercy they may obtain mercy. In other words, the Jews that rejected God, and God's rejected, he gave them mercy, He's going to be merciful to them. They're in no God, no temple, et cetera, et cetera. But God's doing that so the Gentiles will see their opportunity to come into the whole picture. And right now, the church is supposed to be, the believers, Jew and Gentile, are supposed to be in fellowship looking to God so that the Jews are bothered. The Jews got put aside to bring us in. We're up on top to awaken the Jews. What are you going to do to help them? I'm going to bring the tribulation in. I'm going to take you home. I'm going to take you home. You're all going to be gone. The Jews are going to know you're all gone. Some of them. You're all gone. And then I took you. I let the Jews go into tribulation, into Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon, and tribulation. I'm going to take you home. And they're going to know that I was merciful to you and did a wonderful thing with the church, my church, the believing heart. I did a wonderful thing in saving them. And now I took them. And now the Jews are going to wake up. It's going to take 7 years, but they're going to wake up. They're going to get it. And look, and now here's the church all these hundreds of years. So in the process, God's going to be merciful and merciful and merciful. And as you lay down all the way and tie that together rather easily, over to Peter. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. And you will note. Verse 9. 1 Peter 2. First Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. Beloved, chapter 2, verse 9. But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and holy nation, a peculiar, special, prized, privileged people, that we should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Now, verse 10, which in time past were not a people. No, we were not. The Jews were. But are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtain mercy. You didn't have mercy like they did. I took it. They didn't listen to it. I gave you mercy. That's why you're in and they're out. They wouldn't listen. You're saved. We come boldly to the throne of grace, Hebrews 4:16, to find what? God's mercy. And to find, when we find God's mercy, we discover God's grace. And God, that's here we are. We're the objects of your mercy and of your grace, that the whole world might know that you haven't quit your whole program. Jeremiah wasn't wrong in hoping of the future. The future is assured. It's all going to be like I said God. All going to be like that. All going to be like that. I told you. And by the way, you're my